¿Qué es lo que, mi gente? Welcome to the Tres Golpe Podcast with your girl, Yokaira,
Belkis, Lina.
Espérate. Lina, ¿y quién es Lina? Vamos a hablar un poco. Lina,
I'm excited to have Lina on the podcast.
Yo, me too.
I think it's a full circle moment.
It's been a long time coming. It really is.
Lina, tell us a little bit about yourself. ¿Qué lo que?
Sure. So my name is Lina Cañón. I am a first generation immigrant from Colombia. I came here when I was 10. And I have gone into the nonprofit field for about 10 years. And then in the past couple years, I've been, you know, doing the side hustle.
Muy bien hecho, en verdad. Lina es una experta en eso.
And just, yeah, trying to, like, be an entrepreneur, be, you know, get that bag, essentially.
Get that bag.
Unintended.
We could not have you for a better episode, because today we're talking about qué vaina with being in your bag.
Yo, just securing that and being intentional about that. I think when we talk about this episode and who we wanted to bring as a co-host, we said, coño, nosotros queremos una gente que can do it both. You know, that corporate world, that entrepreneurship side of things. And that was you. You were like the first. It was like, coño, pero nosotros, we know Lina. Lina teaches us every day how to do that.
How do we know Lina?
We know Lina. No. We want to go into that?
Yeah, how do we meet her? Yeah.
I met Lina when she got her 30 under her 30 for El Mundo.
Was that when we met?
Yeah. It was the first time I ever saw Lina. And
Wait, what did you get 30 under 30 for, Lina?
El Mundo out here in Boston. El Mundo's Latino 30 under 30 recognizes influential Latinos.
But I thought we met humbly
at the Chica Project before that. Because how did we, or no. Was it we were both?
Yeah, we were both in Chica
we
Project.
We knew we were in Chica Project. We had met. Dang.
Yeah. I was there with somebody from Chica Project.
Yeah.
And they knew you. So they were just like, oh, this is Lina. She's going to be in Chica Project in this cohort. I was like, oh, cool. That's great. And then that night, I like saw your story on screen and I was like,
I got that award for the podcast.
So I was like, wait a second. So she does a podcast and I want to start a podcast. Okay. So then like, I think it was like 4 months after that, that I reached out to you and I was like, hey, you want to grab coffee?
That's so true, because that was in January.
Yeah.
January.
The awards were in October.
Yeah.
That's so wild.
I was like, and I told the girls, I was like, you know, there's this girl. She's dope. Like, I met you that same night and we clicked.
She has a podcast.
She has a podcast. Yeah. Yeah.
That, you know, she just got 30 under 30. She does Chica Project. I remember the conversation.
Yeah. That's so wild, because I always knew that you were in Chica Project. And that's how I associated both of y'all. Like, yeah, Chica Project. And I think Eva was in
there. Yeah, Eva too.
And the nominations that went into El Mundo, most people knew me from the podcast. But what I was trying to highlight in El Mundo was my 9-to-5 at the time, which was philanthropy.
Oh,
so I got up there being like, you know, we need to bring funding to da-da-da-da-da. And everybody was like, tell me more about your podcast.
Yeah,
and I was like, dang.
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking that was my side hustle, but that was the main thing that people were recognizing me for at that time, which is so wild.
Yeah, because that's what I got from
that. Yeah, and if it hadn't been, we would have never
connected.
Yeah.
Never.
So when Tres Golpe was just an idea, Lina was the one that came in and helped us turn it into
like
what it is
today.
Y'all only knew the titles before Tres Golpe.
Dios mío, mira, I'm telling you, it was literally just an idea. Like, we were like, oh my God, where do we even start?
The biggest dilemma was, what are we going to call this podcast?
Yeah.
And I remember Belkis telling me, can I just run a couple names by you that first day that we met? She's like, because we love Avatar. And I was like, stop.
We were like, oh, you like Avatar? Yeah, me too. Oh, we're weird. Oh, okay.
Listen, the podcast has gone through many phases and faces and de todo.
No, but Lina was like the number one with us, like since the beginning. And it was like that support that we needed at the time for us to like see ourselves like actually doing this. I feel like, and I think we say this all the time, but like, sometimes you just need that one person to like believe in you, to be like, ah, damn, my shit is fire. Okay. And I think for us, for me, that was you for sure.
Yeah.
Like after that meeting, I was like, oh, we can do this.
Absolutely.
Oh, we have a voice that we can do this. Oh, this is great. You know, like,
That's just so wild. Because I remember we had just launched our company.
Yeah. Nerd. And that's true, because we talked about it. And
when y'all actually were like, no, we're because
it was a time.
There was a lot of fear that 2020 with the pandemic and everything. It was like, maybe we're not going to do it. Maybe we're not. And it was like, we ended up doing it 2021, early.
Yeah.
And I remember when we partnered up and we were like, you know, like, should we sponsor? Like, y'all were also like really critical to the direction that my company took. Because it was like, we have so many things we could do. What direction do we do?
It's like, you were starting something. We were starting something. Like, let's just partner together and both figure it out as we go.
And look at us now. Stop. You know, I'm telling you, full circle. But we're not going to cry. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about our bag and how we're in our bag and how we're going to help you guys get in your bag. So, okay, vamos a hablar un ching de how we're here, you know, like our familiar pressures, the pressures that nobody really talks about, any advice and expectations that we had and that people had about us in our careers and what we were supposed to do and be. I don't know. ¿Qué lo que? ¿Quién iba a comenzar? Porque ya yo he hablado mucho.
I could start because I love telling this story because people, I think, first gen people really relate to it and they're like, yes, duh. Yeah. But other people are like, wait, what? Like,
how you went through all of that?
Yeah, like how? Oh my God, you survived.
And you're so resilient.
That's my, as I said, you know, I came here when I was 10 and I'm a first gen everything. Like my mom and I, when I was reflecting on this, we were the first women to leave the house. Like my uncle had come, two of my uncles had come to the U.S. already from Colombia. And they had kind of been the first ones that left home, but none of the women had. Like, all of my aunts and my cousins, like, were still there. So it was really me and my mom. Wow. And it was purely luck. Like, we literally, all of my family, you know, that American dream. This is, like, late 80s, early 90s. People are thinking the U.S. is the best place ever. And we're all of my family members are applying for a visa. All of them. And they're getting denied because you know how visa choosing was, right? Like, what do I feel like picking today?
Right.
Sure, this one. You can go.
This name seems.
And so literally we got the visa. So it was like, obviously we're going to come to the U.S. We come to the U.S. and we're full first gen, right? We don't speak any English. We're learning everything by ourselves. And my mom just has one goal and she's just like, financial opportunity, right? And my kid's getting a good education. So we moved to Framingham, then we moved to Westboro, which was a very white town. But she was like, it's one of the best schools.
Yeah. Did you guys know anybody there? Or your mom just picked it?
She just picked it. She just literally somebody. And back then we didn't have like Google like we do now. But literally somebody told her Westboro has great schools.
No.
And mom was like, I'm moving there.
No.
And I went from a Framingham school where I had a bilingual school, y'all. So I was learning English. I went from being surrounded by Brazilians and Dominicans and Puerto Ricans.
I was going to say, in Framingham, hay mucho Brasil.
And the culture was so different. I literally went from that being the introduction to the U.S. to it being one out of like maybe six people of color in my class. So that change was wild already.
Right.
But again, the goal was financial stability. So I was just working. So I started working when I was 13. At a nursing home.
That's when I started dating.
Yeah.
Very different path over here.
That's
not, girl, nice. I was doing that too.
You're out of your bag.
Always doing the most. But I started, I remember going, and again, this goes to, you know, getting the bag early or having that response, the expectation, right?
Yeah. Right.
The expectation's like, we're here, we gotta be sending money back. We're the only ones here making dollars. And I remember going to the manager at this nursing home and being like, they don't give work permits out at my school until you're 14.
Of course.
But I really need to work. And him being like, you know, like, this could get me in trouble. Like, debajo la mesa, bajo la mesa. Like, just come on, hire me. He hires me. And that literally is when I started working and I haven't stopped since.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Since 13.
And work ethic, right? You're an immigrant, so they're like, just work hard. That's what will get you places. Just work hard.
Yeah. So it's like what you're saying, your mom busses her ass. So you're like, I need to do the same thing.
And she was working at Macy's and Filene's all day, like seven, you know, like I would wake up, she wouldn't be there. I would go to bed, she wouldn't be there. So that was crazy. And then I got a second job by the time I got to high school as a housekeeper.
As you do.
Yeah. So I was like going to school, high school, then running to work to, you know, clean rooms. And then on the weekends, I kept the nursing home job. And then they started promoting me because they're like, Mira esta chiquita. Like, she's doing so much. She cleans this room quick.
Lina, she has the energy.
Yeah.
She got the back for this.
She's got that grit.
Everybody, I can just imagine Lena.
Seriously, all the other housekeepers were like, you better fucking slow down.
Yeah.
Because like, you are not going to run me out my job.
And so I get promoted to like the kitchen, you know, and they're like, oh, the guests love you, like that, that. And then I get promoted to the front desk. So by the time I'm a senior, I'm working at the front desk, which is like más calmadito, you know, my body's not that exhausted. I can do homework at the front desk, at this point I'm taking AP classes.
It's way more flexible.
It's way more flexible. And then they're like, Lena, what are your plans after graduation? And I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, cause you know, we're looking for a supervisor role.
Oh.
And so I came home and told my mom, they're going to hire me as a supervisor when I graduate. And we were like, oh, we're going to get that bag, right? Like everybody.
At that time, you were probably at that time, $20 an hour, you're set for life.
If it was salary, it was going to be amazing. Even if the salary was like $20,000, yeah, right? Like exactly. It was like, wow, yeah. She's going to have benefits.
At like what? At like 17 at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, unheard of.
Wow. Everybody in Colombia is like, Linita's going to get us the house. Linita's going to get us the car, right? And I'm over there like, okay. And then I go to school and everybody's doing college prep stuff, right? Mm. Like taking the SATs, ACTs, like, you know, college applications. And I'm like, I'm not doing this. Like I came here in Colombia, we pay for primary school. We pay for high school. So I'm like, I came here to go to school for free. I don't know what you're talking about going to college. Right.
One thing they told me about the U.S. was that education was free. So
education was free. So I'm not doing that no more.
So this ain't adding up. Y'all talking about what?
So wild. And so they were appalled. They were like, what? No, you're obviously going to go to college. And I was like, I don't know about you, but I have a promised supervisor role at the front desk of this hotel.
I will be making more money than you.
You're going to be in debt while I'm going to be getting that bag.
I cannot picture you.
Legit. Huh? And I remember like telling my guidance counselor, they paired me up because, you know, I was a Latina. So they were like, she's at risk. Let's pair her up with a college counselor.
She needs a mentor.
Of course. She needs a mentor. We don't have any of color, but she needs a mentor.
But shout out to Kylie, my white mentor, because she was the one who was like, I'll fill this shit out for you. Like, let's just get you a scholarship and then you decide. And I still could not comprehend because college to me was like, parties and sororities. That's what I saw on TV, right? I don't.
That's the only thing they highlight.
Yeah, I was like,
I don't even do that.
I got work. I got a whole family. I got to support back home, y'all.
There's some people in Colombia that I need to send money to. I don't know. I don't know.
Got remittances to send for real.
Oh my god.
So she's the reason I applied. She's the reason I applied, and I got a scholarship, a full ride to Suffolk, and that's the only reason I went to college.
How crazy!
Shout out to Suffolk University.
Shout out Suffolk.
Yeah.
And how was that conversation with your mom? You get the scholarship, you get this acceptance. What does that conversation look like? Because your mom is over here like talking about with your aunties in Colombia. See, like, jamie about the supervisor. And you come home talking about, hey, mom.
Lina está bien. Yeah.
She's going to carry all of us.
Ella no va a mandar dinero, amor.
It was so tough. Like, at that point, she, again, like, I was like the hope for everybody, right? And like, and they were thinking like,
yo,
she's gonna be running that hotel.
Wait, I just need you to pause on that. Because I think that's something that like a lot of us carry. We're somebody's hope. We're a whole family in Colombia's hope.
Listen, let me tell you, Obama ran a whole and won a whole campaign on hope.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's keep going though. Keep
so
going.
I was everybody's hope. So the disappointment.
Imagine your family being disappointed that you got a full scholarship to one of the top schools.
Oh, what? Yeah. They just did not. And the funniest thing was the dissonance of like being in school and having everybody be like, oh, so proud. Lena got a scholarship. Lena got this. And out of like the 12 schools I applied to, like 10 of them accepted me. So only two didn't.
Yo.
And with some type of financial aid. Because I was a good student, you know, like work hard. Yeah. I took that in academics as well. I had like a really high GPA. Like I was working my ass off.
You don't get a full scholarship to Suffolk.
Right.
Being a lazy person.
It was wild. And so I was also just like, but this is what you brought me here for, right? Like, and I think that goes to immigrants' reactions of being like, oh, this is the manifestation of what I wanted. Like,
yeah.
But they didn't even, couldn't dream it. Like, my mom knew she wanted better education. Mm-hmm. She didn't understand that that would mean that not only would I get into college, but I would leave her to go to college, right?
Oh, my God.
What you is that? Leave. What does better education look like? Like, I think they, like... They understand the like better education, but they don't understand what it entails.
At the sacrifices that actually that they will have to make.
Yeah.
Right. Because we are making a lot of sacrifices, but they see it as like, nah, tu, better education es que tú estás más inteligente. Yeah. Okay, mom, well, I got to go for 4 years.
And then they hold it against you. Oh, like, they're mad at you. I'm like, you brought me here. Yeah,
they think the only sacrifice was bringing you to this country and then it stopped there. And then it's like, I'm not taking any more sacrifices, sis. Like, now it's your turn.
That's it. You brought me to a white community.
Bro, for real.
From Framingham.
And
that's
then you're mad that I'm assimilating.
Ma'am.
Ma'am, I don't know. This is a weird, thing that you're doing right now. And when you're that young, you don't know to like differentiate those things. It's like, no, you're just projecting your insecurities onto me. You're not really mad at me. You're mad at yourself because you didn't, you couldn't even comprehend that this is what's going to happen.
Yes, exactly.
At that time, you were probably like, ay, Dios, mami, me odia.
So, and she, like, me leaving home was like a big thing.
Yeah.
But I do think the promise of, one, I don't have to pay anything, and the promise of a degree that would get me a job, then immediately came with a second layer of expectations. I was like, oh, so she's going to be a lawyer or a doctor.
Yeah.
And she's going to build us 10 houses. Nice. So now we got the bag. Facts.
So being a supervisor was going to get us one house. But now she's working hard to be a lawyer and get us 10 houses.
Yeah. Because, like, a supervisor wasn't enough for her. Linita?
Linita's
inteligente. Linita?
Linita sabe hablar inglés.
Linita americana.
You should see Lina when she comes to the doctor's office with me.
She knows all the lingo.
She's basically a doctor.
Nah, she's different.
She's basically the doctor.
Yeah.
No. So, Lina, so tell me, how was that?
That was wild because then you're a first gen navigating college. College, and you know, as a first gen, we don't get a lot of options. We're survival, right? And then we come here and we're like, oh, options? I can pick my major. Wait, what?
So, what are all these careers you're even presenting to me?
At this point, I'm an HR professional and I don't know all these careers.
It took me grad school to know what a consultant was.
Yeah.
It took me, I was 27 years old.
No, pause. I vividly remember this conversation that we had. You knew what a consultant was. You were just afraid.
Yeah.
You thought it was more than what it actually was.
I didn't know what it, I thought I knew what it was.
Yeah.
And then when it was confirmed, I was like, oh, for real?
Oh, because one thing about predominantly white jobs is that they make it seem like they're so unattainable.
It's so fancy.
It's so unattainable because, you know, like, it's predominantly white. So, like, you have to have that status to even approach that scenario, that life.
And it's like, nah, consultants are just giving advice. That's it.
Advice? And you're paying them mad money for no fucking reason because half the time they're wrong and they will tell you in their assessment, by the way, you know, this is just from my experience. And your experience is very limited.
So what you're saying is that most of our parents are uncertified consultants.
They do it for free. They do it for free.
They do it at a different cost. At a different cost. But that's real. So I came into college and I was just like, okay, what are my majors? And everybody was like, what's your... That's a question you always get asked too. Like, what's your major?
Literally. It's like, what's your name? What's your major?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, what do I want to do? I watch a lot of Law & Order SVU. And I literally grew up on the TV, like, right? 90s kid. Grew up with Olivia and Stabler and just loved their work ethic. And I was like, I'm a major in sociology. I'm going to become a member of an elite squad.
I'm going to move to New York.
Special victim unit.
Serious. And everybody was like, oh, you picked sociology, criminal justice? Why? And I'm like, because I care about the people. And I'm sitting there like, I'm going to be a detective. And then you're 2 years into your courses and your classes and you're like, this is boring as hell.
This is so boring.
This is not what I thought it was. This is not what I see on TV.
Is that what they do over there?
It was off. And honestly, like just the red tape around. And you start learning, right? Like college, you start. And I do appreciate college for giving me that experience of being like, oh, this isn't at all what they're putting on the TV, right?
Yeah.
And so I just started volunteering with Suffolk, and then I was like, wait, volunteerism in this country is a career? Like, there's a sector called nonprofit. People get paid for doing good. Like, hold up.
But
like,
I am never going to do good for free again.
Hold up.
And my mom was just like, stop that. That's not a thing. And I was like, yeah. Because, you know, in Colombia, it was like community service that for a person who grew up being like, served right by the community. Yep. You're like, you don't really see that as your career aspiration. You're in full survival mode. Right. Yeah. And you're just trying to put yourself on and your family on. And so when you graduate college and they're like, no, this is a thing, like AmeriCorps is a thing. And I was like, oh, my heart, like, you know, something was speaking to my passion. Something was speaking to my heart. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And then they tell me, yeah, but it only AmeriCorps comes with a stipend and you basically live in poverty. We'll pay you like $12,000 and you have to get SNAP benefits.
Yikes.
And so everybody in Colombia was like, Linita, what?
¿Qué es lo que está pasando allá?
This
¿Qué le pasó a Lina en esos 4 años de college? Vale, like, this is not, no, to this day, my dad is still ashamed that, like, I don't work in what I graduated in. Like, my international business degree never served what I'm doing now. And I'm like, it's okay, like, I'm fine. Yes. And he's still like, bueno, pero no lo hiciste.
Like, yeah.
Pero mi hermano.
You don't have that title, right? Like, you're not meeting our expectations.
Exactly. His expectations of what I needed to do. So I can only imagine them looking at you like, so tú no eres una abogada. Okay.
It was rough. And when they found out I was on government, because, you know, being an AmeriCorps, you're not supposed to have any other job. So I was on SNAP benefits and I was, you know.
No way.
And when they were just like, hold on, you just graduated, right? We thought you were going to be a cop. And then I picked up government as a second major towards the end. So they were like, we thought you were going to run for office.
And God forbid you say anything that you're doing, they will hold on to it.
Hold on to that. And then they make you extra. Yeah. Like, right? Like, I say, I'm taking a government class. Lena ran for office. She's the next president. And I'm like, well, calm down. And then I have all of Colombia being like, Lina's la presidenta de Massachusetts. I'm like, bro, how?
I have a cousin.
Yeah, but at least they said Massachusetts. My cousins still say New York.
Nueva York.
And I'm like, I don't live in New York.
I have a cousin that when I was like 16, I said like, yeah, I want to run for office maybe. I want to be a president. She's still to this day. That's a conversation she brings up. And I'm like, last time I hang out with her, I said, never say that shit again. Again. Do you know who I am? I'm almost 28 years old. I will never be a fucking official than nothing. Like, do not say that. Do not, that triggers me.
They hold on to that. And again, like, they just didn't know. And, you know, back then it was kind of easier to not know because we didn't have TikTok or Instagram or all these things to see what other people's lives were like. We just, like, painted our own picture.
Yeah. So what we saw on TV and what we made up, what we heard this person said.
Exactly. But I know, Lina, and I think you said it earlier, I just want to transition us into, like, thinking about how did you have that conversation with your mom when you found out your purpose? Because that's really what you said earlier. Like when you saw, like, nonprofit, that spoke to you, that spoke to the person that you wanted to be, to your purpose in life. Like, how... did you have that conversation with your mom, number one, porque yo soy curiosa? And number two, how did you find your purpose and how are you exercising that now?
Yeah. So the conversation with my mom, I remember it being, for her, coming to terms with, again, she had to sacrifice, but she raised a daughter that wasn't sacrificing. Like, I was not in survival mode. I was in exploration of self mode, right? Like, I was... I had the time to think about who I was and do I want to do sociology or government? I was getting all those opportunities that she didn't. Yeah. And to her puzzle piece head, it just didn't fit. No. It was like, you have one job. Like,
your job was to just take care of us.
Yeah.
And that was hard for her.
And it's a lot of the time for them, for our parents families that come to this country, it's the stability component.
Yes.
Like, we don't have time. We don't have space to do anything that could potentially sacrifice us having some form of stability for us and our families.
We don't get the privilege of that.
We don't have
that. That's so true.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is this country has started teaching me that here people were very individualistic, right? Like, that's the other thing that didn't make sense. It was like, community service is just something you do. If you're walking down the street and somebody needs food, you just give it to them, right? Like, that's what we're doing. But here it was like, no, you sign up to volunteer, to do good, and then you go and you brag about it.
Yeah.
And
it's like, it has to come with some, it has to come with some kind of benefit.
Yes.
Like, I'm not just doing this to do this. I'm doing this because it's going to move me to the next place, you know?
It was so altruistic. It was like, And then, you know, you get, so everybody that I was telling in the college area that I was going into nonprofit, they were like, oh, we're so proud of you. That's so, you know, like everybody was like,
yeah, such a huge sacrifice. And my mom was
just like, I don't understand it. So you're not getting paid? Like that was the question she kept asking.
Yeah.
For that conversation, that's the question she kept asking. It was like, so you're not getting paid?
You're not getting paid. Well, let me tell you one thing. And I don't know. I think there's a thin balance between finding your purpose and getting money.
Yeah.
So like you did that, Lena, and I would have been like, you're fucking nuts.
It was nuts.
Like, but also that's your purpose. Do your thing, girl. Like there's definitely, I struggle a lot with this. I struggle a lot with, I think I've struggled a lot in the past with it. And I always lean towards the security part because like you said, like, You did the exploring. You felt secure enough and comfortable enough with yourself that you said, you know, I'm going to take this risk and this risk is going to work out for me. And you went full on that exploration mode. I think I didn't do a lot of that. When I was in college, I made sure I majored in business. And if you know me, I don't do math. I don't do accounting. Anybody that did accounting, crazy in my book, but also my respects. But I had to take accounting classes and calculus classes. And I put myself through those things that I did not like. And I feel like I did that, but a lot of my other friends chose the purpose side. Did sociology. I mean, I still get like hyped about the sociology courses that I took, but I didn't take that course. I didn't go towards the exploration because I still, in my mind, I was like, I didn't believe in myself in the way that I needed to believe in myself. I now do, but I still did an MBA, and it was a business intelligence MBA. Like, I could have gone and done sociology, but I said, what are my fucking priorities? Let me put this shit in. Let me wrap this bag and leave. Like, so yeah. I think everybody, obviously, and we talk about this all the time, about the journey things, but I always had that balance thing that it's like, my side hustles has always been my outlets. My main hustle has always been the security piece. And I don't know if I'm right or wrong.
No. You are right. And does it always have to be that way? Like, do you have to pick between
the two?
Yeah, like, should it always be a choice between purpose and financial mobility, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it shouldn't, right? Like, we know many examples. What's his name? John or Steve over here is not wondering, like, should I pay rent or should I explore my freedoms? Like,
I'm going to major in art.
That's a good topic. That's a good question because you know what just came to mind? That at the time, it wasn't my purpose, but it now is. Yeah. Like, what I'm doing now... Like, I wake up every morning and I'm like, I love my fucking job every single day. But I have that job because I chose security. It wasn't my purpose. I wasn't doing it because it was like, it's something that I saw myself. Like, that's going to take me to my purpose. But I
need to have that security to even think about purpose, right?
And I also always did it with the intention of learning something and challenging myself. So I don't know. Maybe that's what drove me into that.
I think that to me, we are the generation. We see it now, right? Because we know about economic mobility and we're secure in the bag and we're being intentional. We're doing both. We are that generation that is bridging the, like, does it have to be a choice? Like, and not just us, like the world is, right? Like, even after 2020, you see big corporations that are for profit thinking like, does for profit and doing good have to live onto a different ends? Like, can't we just be for profit and still do good? Right. Can we have sustainable businesses and still get the bag? Like, can we be equitable practices and have DEI incorporated in our company and still make a profit? And I think that that's a really big existential question of like, can we exist in capitalism?
Right.
And live purposely driven. Yeah. Because if you're under capitalism, you won't. So some part of you will always be a sacrifice, right?
Yeah, no matter which direction you go and you sacrifice one or the other, it's not about like, oh, there's a perfect choice or there's an easy choice or there's... No, regardless of whatever you choose, you sacrifice one or the other. Yeah, so...
I saw Shonda Rhimes did a college speech recently, and she talked about all of her successes with, you know, how to get away with murder, like all this. And in her speech, she was like, I just want you to know that when I'm succeeding at one, I'm failing at the other.
Yes.
And I was just like, yo, that hit so deep, because I was like, that's the sacrifice that we talk about, and especially for women.
Yes. Because that was the biggest component. What I love so much, because I know exactly what speech you're talking about, where she came from it from the angle of being a mother.
Yes.
And not wanting to be a wife.
Yes.
Ooh. Like,
she was like, Belkis, when I
sent you the speech. I sent it to Belkis because me and Belkis were having, probably didn't, but it's because at the time, her and I were having a lot of conversations about, yo, we're at this age in our life where we have to, where it's a constant shift between being a career woman, being a wife, and being a mother, and also being a daughter. Because that
and
never.
Being perfect at all of them.
Oh though. My God. Oh
you,
my God.
You better get 100 on all of those my categories. God. Dude, and right? Shonda Rhimes made it okay to be like, no, I'm going to pick out, like, whatever phase of my life, which one I'm going to give my 1,000 to, or, you know, like, whatever it is.
And she made it very clear that sometimes to the sacrifice piece for women, right, you have to sacrifice. So she was like, when I was getting the award for how to get away with murder, I missed my daughter's graduation.
Yeah.
Or when I was watching my daughter's first steps, I missed the screenwriting for Grey's Anatomy. Yes. Like something, you know, and it's like, and we know that. Like, I felt that so deep because I was like, that's so right. Like, there have times, and my biggest sacrifice to back to your question of like, how did I find my purpose, is my biggest question to me was like, at what cost am I willing to put my boundaries, right?
Yes.
Because my hustle, like I said, I've been working since I was 13. Y'all, I am tired. I'm ready for retirement. And I'm like,
no, Lena, you're giving, yeah, I'm over here like, damn.
I'm exhausted, right?
Sis, take a break.
And it's always been at my sacrifice, right? Like at the sacrifice of my rest, or even just how I viewed rest. Like before, when people used to be like, are you going to take a nap? I'd be like, duermo cuando yo estoy muerta. I'm good. You remember that? Like, I sleep when I'm dead, yo. Now I think about that, I'm like, that was morbid as hell. I want to sleep
now.
That
was toxic. That shit was toxic.
My makeup. Like, what?
Not me. I schedule a nap in.
Yes. And so,
I'm feeling a little stressed. I'm going to take a nap.
And I think that, you know, at an early age, I didn't know what I was sacrificing. No, but I was sacrificing myself. Like, my own mental well-being. And that is how when I sat down and I think about, what is my purpose? And my purpose is to do good. And my purpose is to move systems to be equitable for women. And for first gen, because that was my experience, and I feel really strongly about being first to do something, and so many people relate.
Right.
Like, when I launched that company, the Nerd Collective with Sajda, it was like, Sajda and I are such different people. We are totally different cultures, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different countries, different everything. Yeah. And we connected because we are the first. And the first connects you because you are the first to experience the pressures, the highs, the lows, the responsibilities,
the expectations,
the guilt.
The guilt.
The guilt that comes with not doing like a little thing.
Yeah. Let me tell you, like, guilt is one of the things that like come from all of those expectations that we're talking about. From all of those sacrifices that we make. When Shonda says, like, I'm sacrificing this to do this, I think she forgot to say, and I'm also guilty as fuck.
Yes.
No, she didn't forget. She said that.
She said it. She good thing. I'm going to go back and hear her say all this because, I'm going to watch this.
No, because the thing is, we're not ever allowed to talk about it.
Yeah.
You almost can't admit it. You have to cry about it at night by yourself because, God forbid, you say that you aren't perfect at something.
God forbid they think you're a shitty mom and you admit to it.
Yeah.
So they feel guilty about it.
Now it takes the pleasure out of them talking shit. Me quitó el gusto de decir.
No, porque you know when you need to wash the dishes? You know you need to, you're gonna. And then somebody's like, yo, you're gonna wash these dishes? You're like, nah.
Nah.
Actually,
yo soy una sucia.
Yo soy una poldiosera, actually. No, porque esta no limpia ni los baños y se siente mal.
Right?
Yeah. Like, bro.
And I think that that's something we grapple with too, because when our parents' generation, they sacrificed their mental health. They never sat down and was like, am I tired? No. Yeah. And I talked to my mom and she's like, ponte las pilas. Ponte las pilas, levántate. And I'll be like, mom, I actually had a really bad mental health that I needed to take the day off. And she's like, the day off, o sea, limpiaste. Like, it's still surrounded around productivity.
Yes.
And that was really wild for me. So those are the questions I've been asking myself to get to my purpose. And I feel like that's been grounding me and just putting myself first each time and then being about it. Because the other day I was at this panel and I was like, put yourself first. Don't ever take an unpaid internship or fellowship. Like, make sure you're doing something you're passionate about. And then after the panel, this lady came up to me and she's like, where are you doing your fellowship? And I told her. And she's like, oh, and you have a stipend? And I was like, oh, no. Like, I'm in an unpaid fellowship, yeah. y'all. And then she was like, what's the topic of, you know, the sectors? And I'm like, oh, it's AI, fintech, and cybersecurity. And she's like, oh, are you passionate about that?
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, she just checked my whole life.
Lady.
So what was your whole speech about?
Lady, be out.
It was, it was wild. My speech was literally that, was telling people be only do what you're passionate about and don't accept anything less than you're worth. And then that I came home and I had a whole midlife crisis being like, hold up. Somebody just held up a mirror. They weren't even aggressive about it. They weren't checking me, right? It wasn't toxic. It was unintentional. They were like, yo, so you doing the thing you said you're doing? And I was like, I'm gonna get back to you this week.
I'm rechecking some things. At that, I resonate with that so much because a lot of times we talk about these things and we talk about it. Endless cycles of talks with everyone that we know, everybody that we care. We know it. We see it. And we don't fucking do it.
Yeah.
So literally, if anybody's listening to the be about it, bro.
Yeah.
Like, if it's one thing, like one of the things that is keeping me like motivated and going lately is like I pick one thing in the week that I want to do. Before I used to do a to-do list and it was like.
Yes. And you overwhelm yourself. I think that's the other thing. We're all such overachievers that I didn't realize I was stretching myself thin until I got asked this and I'm like, why am I doing this? Right. And again, the guilt, the pressure, the expectations. And I was like, hold up, I could slow down.
Yeah. Like. And you know what else to that piece, Belk, is about the to-do list? Because I still do them, but I always make sure to add something in there that is just good for me.
Yes.
It's just good for me. Literally, it's not to finish an assignment. It's not to, literally, Yokaira, take time to take a nap today. Yeah. Take time to go to the park. Take time to, and bitch, you know, that's the first thing I check off that list.
Check.
And I love the take time for you because... Before, again, I never associated that with success.
No.
Success was productivity. Success was how many, like having my inbox at zero, having tasks completed.
Yes.
But now success is, am I actually owning the routine I want to set? Am I actually embodying the energy I want to set, right? I'm already a fire sign. I'm already an Aries. So I'm already working at 1,000, right?
Like
I'm
You're already hustling.
I'm already.
You come in here, you're like, okay, vamos a hacerlo.
I like sit on 3 boards. I have a full-time job. Yeah. I have a side company. I'm doing a fellowship. Like I'm already doing the most. The least I could do is incorporate into that list a nap.
Yeah.
A hammock. But you said a dog walk,
You
right?
said it earlier too. Think about yourself first. And it's something that does not come fucking natural to us because when we make these sacrifices, we're most often than not, especially in career, we're making it for other people, for what they wanted for us.
Oh, and the career is bad because they see you and they're like, oh, this little one is excelling. Let me give you something else.
Yeah.
Oh, you're really good at it. Do you want to join this?
Yeah.
Oh, and then you feel that.
And then you, then you, next thing you know, you're looking around and you're like, damn, I'm doing way more than I even signed up for.
I'm doing FinEd and I don't care.
Even to what you're saying, Lena, about taking time for yourself, I also think it's important for you to sit with yourself and ask what that looks like. Because sometimes we're so used to that productivity and that keeping busy that sometimes we think it's what we like.
Oh my
God. Yes.
Because we've normalized it. We're used to it. It brings us almost comfort. And it's like,
but that comfort piece is huge.
Yes. Yes.
This week was traumatic as hell. And do you know how many people said to me, no, I need to work so I can keep it. It can keep me distracted. And I was like, pause.
Yeah.
Do you know how awful it is to say that because you are experiencing trauma, you are going to keep yourself, you are going to
ignore
add workload to your mind and your body to deal with that. Like and that
in itself is crazy, but I think our people are really good at that. Mm-hmm. Our people have mastered the, yo no le voy a prestar atención a eso. Yeah. Let me do something else.
Yeah.
Let me go to work.
And a lot of it's because I know what we hear. I don't have time to be sad.
Oh, Dios mío.
How many times have we not heard our parents?
Yeah.
Yo no tengo tiempo para eso.
Levántate de esa cama que a nosotros no nos da depresión.
Pon música. Pon música.
Yeah.
And you grow up seeing literally self-medication with practices that are not healthy at all, right? And you identify them. I think we identify them. We can talk about them. But like Belkis was saying earlier, are we about them?
Yeah.
Right? Like, are we actually holding ourselves accountable to doing that?
Which is, I love that you brought that up, Lena, because what I love so much about your story is that it's so different from mine. the expectation for me was to go to college. And I know that was completely different than from you. Like, it's crazy to me. Like, wait, what? Your mom allowed you to work at 13? My mom didn't let me get a job till after high school. That's how serious my mom was about me making sure that I prioritize education. Mind you, my mom, again, first generation, she came here. This is coming from a woman who didn't even finish high school.
Yeah.
Because she was just like, okay, I need to bust my ass so that my daughter never has to worry about having to work and she can go to school. And mind you, my mom had no idea what that was going to look like. So I went to college and I was like, okay, I'm only doing this because I was told that I had to. Yeah. You get what I'm saying? And whatever your mom tells you, you listen. You do it. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to college. She obviously didn't like the dorming piece of it, but I was like, sis, if I'm going to do something you want me to do, I'm going to do it my way. Like, you know? So but to your point of like us witnessing our parents doing certain things, I realized like now that I'm an adult, I have a much better relationship with my mom than I did before growing up, and which I think is a lot of our experiences, you know, mother-daughter relationships.
Because now you can actually tell them you're actually bonkers.
Yeah. You can have a real conversation like
you
can be like,
you could be the one holding up the mirror like,
sis. Like, mom, I think that's a little bit of a trauma that you're showing.
Are you projecting? Come watch Encanto with me, mommy. Exactly. Come here.
And for me, it was that piece of the guilt. Because I saw my mom never take a break, I, in turn, thought that every time I took a break, I felt guilty about it.
Yeah.
And then it didn't feel like a break because I'm waking up from this nap still feeling stressed because I took a nap. Do you get what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
And girl, I cried to my mom one day. And I was like, mommy, I feel really overwhelmed and stressed to the point where like, I don't know what the fuck to do. Like I just, and then that's when I was like, I went to my doctor. I was like, yo, I'm pretty sure I have something. And they told me, yeah, but you have anxiety. Like what you have is called anxiety. Yeah. And I had to like sit there and have a conversation with my mom. And it was my mom telling me, yo, Gaira, you don't have to do anything that makes you unhappy. And I was like, wait, you don't care
it's
if I.
Time.
Yeah. Crazy.
And I was like, mommy, I did everything thinking that like your love was conditional, completely forgetting. She's like, my love for you is unconditional. I don't need you to do anything that is giving you anxiety. I don't need you to do anything that's making you unhappy.
Shout out to your mom for vocalizing that.
I was like, and
seriously, shout out to your mom for one, acknowledging that, and then two, verbalizing it. Because a lot of Latina moms may see it. Maybe they see it.
Yeah.
Oh, but no way in hell they're going to tell you. They're going to keep that to themselves.
Dude, and and this is where I, like, again, in any situation, see where you played a part. I saw my mom, because I never saw my mom ever complain. I never saw my mom ever talk back to her mom. I thought that if I even brought that shit up, that was like a no-no. I could have had this conversation with my mom a long time ago, but because me and my mom just also didn't have that relationship where any disagreement was more so bickering, less like, no, let's just sit down and really get vulnerable, really talk about.
And it takes being a whole adult to do that. Like it takes being confident in yourself, because when you're reliant on their love, it's like, you're not going to be like, mom, let's sit down and have a healing session. Right?
I think it makes it takes you being mature enough to, one, recognize those sentiments within yourself to then actually tell your mom that, yo, I think your love is conditional, because that thing is big.
And just feel that. After that, I felt so liberated. Yeah, and that's when, for me, it became easier for me to talk about me feeling anxiety. It became so much easier for me taking days off and really not giving a fuck. Like, a lo que tú quieras con esa información. Pero te estoy dejando saber que yo me voy para RD. And whether I have the time or not, the PTO, I don't know what to tell you. And the biggest thing my mom kept telling me, that is why I wanted you to have an education. I wanted you to have the liberty to pick and choose and do whatever the fuck you want. No man can hold you back. No job can hold you back. Like, you have an education. You speak English. Yeah. You could do whatever the fuck you want. And I was like,
you're
sis.
But anxiety. But anxiety is holding me.
Say, listen, I'm over here letting anxiety like grapple me into relationships I don't want to stay in. Jobs I don't want to be in.
Girl.
All because I'm over here internalizing what? Lo que el mundo está diciendo.
Yep. And I think we talked about those expectations and the pressures that we hold. And then that balancing act of the sacrifices that we make, right? Like, it's balancing that with living our life, maintaining ourselves sane mm-hmm. every single day.
Talk about it, sis.
So I'm just here to say that we're three very strong women that have gone through that, and we represent that generation that actually was like, you know what, fuck it. Yeah. Actually, I feel like sharing our special sauce, and Jokara, I think you started, like being vulnerable and talking and expressing and actually looking at yourself and saying like, coño, espérate, this is not supposed to be like that. It's a special sauce. It's something that sometimes I think we don't talk enough about.
And as Latina woman, like, this is also why this podcast is so important, right? Because the other thing is like,
say it again.
The narrative is controlled negatively. Like, esta no se levantó de la cama todo el día. She's depressed. And everyone's like, oh my God, right?
Yeah.
But when we start owning that narrative and saying like, hey, I could not get out of bed.
Yeah.
Like, I actually did not get out of bed all day.
You own
it. Because I'm depressed and I'm here today and let's do this. Yeah, like, right. I'm acting. And it's like, it shifts their mind, right? Because they are so used to like one thing being the right thing, which is like high functioning at all times. Bienvenida, hola, ¿cómo está? Ta, ta, ta. Yeah. Limpia la casa if there's going to come guests like this, you know? And being moving at all times. My abuelita, she's like 85 or something. Every day she wakes up at like 7 a.m. a barrer. I'm like, why are you so, like, woman, sit down. I'm tired.
Girl, don't get me started with my grandma. Sis retired, lasted 2 weeks, and went and asked for her job back.
Yeah.
That's, like, could, that's what I'm
no,
saying.
No, I thought, no, yo no puedo.
But that's what
bitch,
I'm
why?
Saying.
You can't rest?
They literally can't rest. They literally can't. And then
yo no conozco esa vida.
And it's so hard for us to recognize that. And I didn't recognize it until full disclosure. I didn't recognize it until I was living with my ex. Mm-hmm. And he's a Libra. So he was chilling. And he grew up as a first gen, like his parents were the first gen immigrants. So he got to chill, right? Like, he wasn't the first gen immigrant. No. He just grew up here. And I would wake up on Saturdays to be like, you know, I was on the to-do
list.
And he'd be like, it's Saturday. Like, I'm a brunch. Yeah. And I'd be like cleaning around him, like doing piruetas, you know, like, you're not going to grab a broom. You're not going to. And he would always just be like, what is your urgency to always be doing something, bro? And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. What is it actually?
What is it? Yeah, I was like, I don't know. He's like, can't the dishes just be done later? And I'm like,
they could. So let me tell you one thing, and it's funny that you mentioned, we all have different upbringings, obviously. My mom takes breaks. And when I
your mom's a real one, though.
Bocus's mom is so different from like my mom and what I'm used to.
Nah, like, you guys are talking, I'm like,
can't relate.
Yo, you know, no, my mom literally is the queen of naps.
Yeah.
Going back to DR, she never worked. She started working now. The biggest hustler you will ever meet has two jobs now because she knows the assignment. But you will go to my house at any point right now in Dorchester, and she's either sleeping or sleeping and naked. Like, that's all I would tell you about my mom. Like, walks around naked, very much on the liberal side of things, and take naps.
And that is stepping. That is somebody getting their back. Your mom has literally hit the top of the pyramid of self-actualization.
Exactly.
Because literally, when I take a nap, I feel so powerful.
Yeah,
I feel so powerful. When I tell people, like, I don't wear bras, like, I'm just out here doing my thing, and they're like, "What?
Wait,
are you okay?" And I'm like, "I'm the best I have ever been
in my life." Yeah, and
shout out to your mom for knowing that
she does. And, like, she's always understood that assignment. So I've never actually had... My dad is, like, also very, like, hardworking. But he's, like, a play hard, like,
work hard.
Yeah. So I never internalized that, like, ay, tú tienes que estar haciendo algo. Yeah. So I remember when we used to talk, Yokara and I had these conversations when she was going through that. And I would just be like, Yokara, pero hay veces que tú nada más te tienes que acostar, mi loca.
Just chill.
And I know... And
Yokara was like, how?
You know? But I know that, like, it was definitely more intense than that. But from my perspective, I've never actually struggled with that, with those pressures. Because both my dad and my mom were just like, ay, veces que la cosa no funciona. Y cuando no funcionan, tú te bebes un trago, tú te acuestas.
Yeah. And you know, that skill to rest, to pause, is actually the most important when you are thinking about your purpose or when you're thinking about career shifts or when you think about where do I go, what is my path. If you're constantly responsive, right? Like, if you're constantly like, I got to keep working to the, because I got this, I got this to-do list, I got to go. The next thing you know, it's been 5 years and you've just been running for five years, right? But when you take the intentional time to pause, like lately I've been telling people, like, when was the last time you daydreamed?
Yeah.
Lena, I had never
Lena, you stole my line because
that was my quote when I was y'all saw me taking selfies over there.
Yeah.
I was on my in my bag haciendo ya tú sabes burbuja y de tu hija, una movie.
But daydreaming, like, and people think that again productivity is achieving
manifesting.
And we don't even get to dream, we don't even get to think creatively about what could my life, right? Like, if I hadn't worked all of high school, and I had the chance to, after every day of school, to just rest and digest everything that I was learning, or my identity, or what I wanted, or find my purpose, I can damn well tell you I would have worked smarter and not harder. But because the motto was work hard, work hard, work hard, I didn't actually take a break and start thinking about, what does success mean to me?
Yeah.
Until I was way late in my 20s, right?
My pressures came a lot from, and I think that goes back to like why I chose the major that I chose, was about a financial stability for me. I think my dad wanted me to go to college. That was a given. But for him, it was like, you have to be financially stable. My mom, I needed to be financially stable for her because I know she didn't have that stability and I wanted to be there for her. So for me, it was always money driven. Yeah. It still is. But now it's like you said, now I can sit down and be intentional about my purpose. About, yes, I'm going to get money, but I'm going to get money doing things that I like. Yeah. I love being an HR professional because I get to fucking know all everybody's business, be a chimosa as hell, and get good money. And then now I found an industry that I'm like, wait a minute, these people get paid this much? Wild.
Exactly. And that to me, I think that piece too is what I'm thankful for college, because I was like, I didn't know what industries there were.
Well, you didn't know what you didn't know.
Exactly. And it's not until you're in it that you're like, hold up. And again, Johnny's been learning about consulting since he was at the dinner table eating with his dad.
What I also want to add to that too, for all our listeners, do not feel pressure to have it all figured out either so early on.
Yeah,
we're over here talking about like, oh, we learned later in life. Yo, that is okay, because what you know today might not be what you know or what you want in a few years. That is okay.
Yeah. Your success is not only defined by you, but the pace of your success.
Yes.
And it's not defined by money.
No.
And we all have time to figure that out. Like, I needed to figure out that, yes, money was important, but so is fucking a fulfilling career.
Yes.
Right. So is
my happiness.
So is my happiness.
So is my mental health.
So is my mental health. Like, hay veces que uno hace cosas nada más porque, por lo que hablamos, because we have all these things, these pressures. But then having that time to sit down with yourself and be intentional, it's my secret sauce, actually.
And
it's what has helped me be where I am today, because I feel like not a lot of people, and I'm not being humble about this shit, I think we are too humble, because that's another pressure. Once you get to where they want you to get, you can't brag about it.
Yeah.
You can't make them feel like this is important, because if you make them feel like this is important, then you're not humble enough. And I'm actually tired of that shit.
I'm so tired of that too. Like, I want to own it. Why can't I own it? I did that, actually.
But then me, like, I think that I've done very efficiently throughout is that every single time I've recognized, like, okay, I'm stuck. I don't know what to do career-wise. I've always sat down with myself and said, okay, so what's the plan?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, and that was what I was going to say to you, Belkis, is like when you said, like, I have found a career. And, like, that's great, and that's your time right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that might not be the same career in 5 years.
Like, exactly.
You know? Like,
and being okay with that. Stop getting fixated on this idea that what you know today is what you have to stick to for the rest of your life. Bitch.
I learned
recently that on average, and this was from a career coach that I learned this from, on average, an adult in the United States changes their career 7 times.
Let's go.
Bitch. Yes. Here we are being told that, like, you need to be and stick to whatever you chose at the very beginning.
And that was so praised. I remember people being like, so I've been at this company. And they would get awards. This person has been at this company for 15 years. Give them an award. And I'm like, 15 years?
Dude.
What are you learning?
Yeah.
Like, there's it's usually the people that are not even good. Like, you're not excelling.
And I strongly believe.
You're not excelling. You're just here.
And I strongly believe it's because you haven't moved.
Yeah.
You have to move. You have to. the human, we are human. We are constantly made to be changing and evolving and learning and growing, bro. We're not meant to be stagnant.
No.
And so I don't know who came up, and I bet you it was capitalism. Yeah, I'm gonna try to trace it back to capitalism.
Since you know where it came from.
Stay in this one job forever. Yeah. But that's really what we like that here. Mobility, the generations coming up, I think, are really taking this on because the remote workforce, the hybrid workforce, like the equity in it, but really
the exposure.
Truth, and the transferable skills. Like, that's the other truth, right? Like, they always tell you, like, do an internship. Like, do this to get skills. But also, your job is a skill. And, like, I everything that I learned housekeeping, everything that I learned at the kitchen, everything that I learned at the front desk, all things I still use today. Yeah. In rooms that when I say, oh, I used to be a housekeeper, they look at me, they're like, what? Mm-hmm. Yo, I was still catering 2 years ago. So I was working at the Hancock building. In philanthropy, managing like $1 million fund on my own and then other folks, you know. And I was on the weekends at Viva Mi Arepa at the front desk, hustling in the summer because I was still on the paper, right?
Exactly.
But people don't associate that. No. They're like, wait, and the skills that I was learning at the front of Viva Mi Arepa, I was bringing to the John Hancock and the skills that I was learning over there, I was also bringing back to
and
my
that's
community.
Why we should be overpaid in all these fucking jobs because the experiences that we bring into these bases... Nobody could ever. You could never.
And they really, always, Karen really could never.
Yes, like really never.
And making this and making this tangible, that's what resumes are good for. Yeah. Tailor your resume for every single job that you are going to apply for. You know how you only you're supposed to have like only a couple bullets? Make sure those bullets change for whatever job it's going to be. Like, okay, you could put housekeeping for something. Make sure that those bullets reflect what you'll be doing now and then change it for whatever the next job you're going to apply to. Girl.
Absolutely.
Where about and being in this bag?
You know what else I learned in getting my bag is that at the end of the day, it does not matter how much you put into your resumes about who you know. Yeah. And to what Wilkis was saying earlier about like how white people just use these words.
Yeah.
That word network, you know that just means community, right?
Yeah.
Literally. Like literally they have turned it into this gross thing that you're like, oh, I need to go and be like, hello, my name is and blah, blah, blah. But it's really just community. I'm, y'all watched Encanto, right? I'm a reference Encanto. Encanto is a perfect example.
Yes.
That house at the end got built because of the network that they had built.
Yeah.
They were the plug. They all had, you need flowers? I got you. Right. You need somebody to move that heavy ass thing? I got you.
And that's what we do
and that's
now.
Community.
Like we,
that's what we've been
doing. We've always done that.
Latinidad, people of color, like all of us are so communal.
We're so good at it.
And the U.S. is not. It's so individualistic. Yeah. So they want to make you feel like network is a thing you have to strive to when we already are born with that. Yeah, exactly. Like, we already are. Yeah. And that's why when Wilkis was like, you're the plug. Like, this is the episode. I was like, that is the very basis of our existence is community.
We could have, Lena, we literally, like, to full circle, we could have just Googled how to start a podcast. Instead, we're like, no, we know someone that already started a podcast.
And vice versa. At the nonprofit where I work, we were trying to hire, and I was like, yo, I need to craft this JD. Who do I know that works in HR? Wilkis.
Yeah.
Immediately hit her up. I was like, yo. And I think the important thing about the difference between network or community or bringing power back is, like Wilkis said, get paid for it, right?
Yes.
Like, I'm not going to ask you for your free advice.
I know.
Like, let's actually do this in a way that's putting each other on. Because when we're thinking about each other, we're like, ah, no, it's un favorcito that my cousin's going to do for us. It's un favorcito that my mom's going to do for us. When other folks in other spaces are not thinking that way, they're like, so-and-so is a sustress and you're a seamstress or whatever that is. Yeah. Anna, you're going to edit that one. Where they're like, so-and-so is a chef. And you're just like, oh, no, mi abuelita cocina. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But they're calling themselves chefs and paying themselves chef money. And we're over here making abuelita
doing it
for half the price that it costs to actually do. You know what I'm saying?
110% because they value their craft. And we have always thought of our craft of just like, it's okay.
But you know what think it was? I think it was a shift in, because in, like, for example, in La Película Encanto, it's an exchange.
Yeah.
You're giving me flowers, but I'll give you arepas. You know what I'm saying? But now the exchange is going to be currency.
Yes.
It's this bag that you're going to provide to.
Don't act like you forgot.
Riri,
I love this conversation. I wish it could go on for longer, pero... It can't. So, Lena, thank you so much for coming. We love hanging out with you. And I think there was a ton of gems here in this combo today. So, ya ustedes saben, Lena does not have any Instagram or social media.
Right, Lena?
Because she chooses peace. Pero if you know her, you know her.
Lena, but are you still on Twitter?
No.
Wow.
Girl, I Lena, you TikTok. Were... Lena, no, not great. TikTok.
I know.
Like,
you're on TikTok?
How are you gonna get around? Like, how are you gonna like?
I don't. You can find me in my hammock. Y'all know where I live.
Lena's chooses, chilling, so don't contact her.
Exactly. She chooses peace every single day, and we love her for that. So thank you so much for coming. Y yo te deseo entre golpe.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Tres Golpe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a 5-star rating and share it with your friends and familia. Make sure to join El Coro by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Post us on your story or page. Dino que lo que, what did you think of today's episode? And don't forget to tag us at
Tres Golpe Podcast.